नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय एते लीनास्तव यशो किल लोकतीर्थानि गायन्त आदि पुरुषानुपथं भजन्ते प्रायो अमि मुनिगणा पपतीय मुख्या भूधं वनेऽपि न जहात्यनकात्मत एवम् O original personality, these bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. Though you have disguised yourself within this forest, O sinless one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. Purport. The word gudham is significant in this verse. It indicates that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form of Krishna or Balaram appears like an ordinary human being within the material world, great sages always recognize the Lord as the Supreme Absolute Truth. All the transcendental forms of Godhead are eternal and full of bliss and knowledge, exactly the opposite of our material bodies, which are temporary and full of misery and ignorance. One meaning of the word Tirtha is the means for crossing beyond material existence. Simply by hearing the glories of the Supreme Lord or by chanting them, one immediately comes to the spiritual platform beyond material existence. Thus, the Lord's transcendental glories are here described as a tirtha for everyone in the world. The word gayanta indicates that great sages give up their vows of silence and other selfish processes to glorify the activities of the Supreme Lord. Real silence means not to speak nonsense, to limit one's verbal activities to those sounds, statements, and discussions relevant to the loving service of the Supreme Lord. The word anagha indicates that the Supreme Lord never performs sinful or offensive activities. The word also indicates that the Lord immediately excuses a sin or offense committed by a sincere, loving devotee who may accidentally deviate from the Lord's service. In the specific context of this verse, the word anagha indicates that Lord Balaram was not disturbed by the bees who were constantly following him, anupatam. The Lord blessed them by saying, O bees, come into my confidential grove and feel free to taste its fragrance. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 15, entitled The Killing of Dhenuka, the Ass Demon. Text number 7, or 6.
He
in this verse, Sukadeva Goswami is sharing with us a conversation between Krishna and Balaram. It's taking place on a very holy day, in the most holy place. The day is the 8th lunar day of the bright fortnight of the month of Kartik. And the place is the forest of Vrindavan. The Padma Purana tells us that on this day, Krishna, after progressing in his age from his Kumar Lila to his Poganda Lila, was given charge of the cows. Previously, Gopal was taking care of the calves with his friends. But once he reached about the age of 5 or 6, then his father Nanda Maharaj and the other gopas headed by Upananda, Abhinanda, Nanda, Sunanda, Nandana, they all agreed that now Krishna is strong and grown up, so he should take care of the full-grown cows and bulls. Now he was about 5, and Nanda Maharaj had no less than 900,000 cows that would go out to the pastures every day. So how is it a 5-year-old boy could do that? And for you parents, would you like to entrust your 5-year-old child to spend the whole day herding 900,000 cows? And they were big cows. They were Sarabi cows, Kamadenus. Because of their love for Krishna, they could give unlimited quantities of milk. That may seem impossible, but on the spiritual level, in Vrindavan, every living being in the spiritual world is a perfectly liberated soul.
Did you tell?
Okay. Every living being is a liberated soul who has awakened, or who is awakened to that great treasure of ecstatic love for Krishna in their hearts. That is the only purpose of existence from a spiritual perspective. In this material world, we have so many purposes we have to achieve. Some of you have to make money. Yes. These days, even swamis have to make money. It's very strange. In fact, householders often ask swamis for bakshish. But anyways, in this world, it's one of the duties. We have to make money. We have to raise a family. We have to give our family education. Here in India, you have to get your daughters married, your sons married. That's a serious anxiety for some. Maybe for all. And then once somebody's married, they have to somehow or other maintain the relationships. We have duties to the government. We have duties, so many duties. But in the spiritual world, there's only one purpose of existence, and that is to feel Krishna's love, to love Krishna, and to share the love we're getting Krishna with every living entity, and to feel everybody's love for Krishna being shared with us. That's all. It's nothing else. All the other apparent duties are simply expressions for that. So Krishna is taking care of all these cows. And Krishna, he loves his cows unlimitedly. And for Krishna, 900,000 cows is nothing. After all, in his mere expansions as Vishnu, Narayan, he's maintaining every living entity in all the universes, in all of creation. And beyond creation, he's maintaining, preserving all living entities in the spiritual world, which is unlimitedly greater than material creation. And how much Krishna has the power to love. Our acharyas tell, at the end of the day, when it's time to bring the cows back from the pasture, Krishna climbs the Terakadamba, very famous historical tree. The descendant of that tree is still there in Nandagam. In fact, a descendant of that very tree is in our Vrindavan forest here in Mumbai. But it's a secret. And if you want to know which of the trees in the forest is Terakadamba, you have to inquire from someone who knows. That is the science of parampara. So Krishna climbs Terakadamba and calls out the name of a cow. Every single cow hears her name only. It's not that he has a list and he has a microphone system and he's calling out Shamali, Gori, Surabi. He just with such love for it from his heart. Every word in the spiritual world is an expression of pure ecstatic love. We just chanted Brahma Samhita, where Lord Brahma is explaining his revelation of what Vrindavan is. Every word is a song, a love song, a pure love song. Every motion is an expression of love in dance. So Krishna calls a name, and he calls in that one word that he speaks, he actually calls every single cow's individual unique name. It's not like, if you're in the crowded Indian train during rush hour and someone calls something and you think, oh, he must be calling me. Absolutely clear. He's literally calling and resounding the name of every cow. And each cow is hearing that as his love and enters through their ears, through their minds, right into their hearts, and absolutely captures them, conquers them. all the cows start crying in happiness. All the cows smile ecstatically. All the cows raise their tails in spontaneous jubilation, straight up toward the sky. And all the cows respond to Krishna's call by calling out his name. That's the way they chant Krishna. Gopal, Govinda, all of Krishna's names are included in that. And Krishna hears each one of them calling his names. And then Krishna calls out again, and each one hears their names. And they go, and Krishna goes, Shamali, and they run to go meet Krishna. All of them. This is Krishna's power. Shukadev Goswami tells how when he was sitting on bank of Yamuna with cowherd boys, gopas, they were all eating lunch together. They were sitting in circles around Krishna. There were thousands and thousands and thousands of boys. And they assembled in such a way that Krishna was like the whirl of a lotus. And there were all the boys were like the petals. First there were 8 around him in a circle. Then 16 around them. Then 32 around them. Then 64. Then 128. And then continuing like this. And every boy is thinking, Krishna keeps looking at me. He's only looking at me. How is that possible? Because some are behind him, some are on the sides of him, some are distance away. And it's not that Krishna manifested, you know, so many different heads with different eyes going in different directions. You know, jivas, ordinary people like Brahma. It's extraordinary from our perspective. They have to have all sorts of different bodily features in order to see in different directions. But Krishna's just an ordinary little boy eating his food. And every child is thinking, Krishna is only looking at me. Krishna's only smiling at me. And gopis during Rasalila, of all the gopis on the banks of Yamuna, each one is thinking, Krishna's dancing only with me. And he was dancing with all of them. This is Rasa Vihari. This is his power to exchange love forever with all living beings. So when Krishna was calling the cows, they were all coming. It was so intimate. It was so beautiful. And in the morning, when it's time to take the cows out for the pastures, they were all getting milked, and Krishna would come, and they would all see Krishna coming, and they would, with their hooves, they would go like mrdangas, like a drum to welcome Krishna. And in time with the rhythm of their hooves, tapping against the ground very enthusiastically, they would be mooing in ecstasy. And Krishna would touch them and they would all feel Krishna. It's the land of love. When Krishna would go out to the pastures, the dust of Vrindavan, so sacred. No, when you have that many cows, there's a lot of hoof prints. Yes? And then in Vrindavan forests and pastures are so many deers and peacocks and other beautiful animals. But every time Krishna placed his foot on the earth, his footprint would be left in the dust. And that was considered by all the residents of Vrindavan to be the supreme ornament of the entire earth. Every footprint. And never, ever, ever would any cow, peacock, or anyone else step over or on those footprints. When they would see Krishna's footprints, and everybody could recognize Krishna's footprints because of love. It's not like there were signs saying, "Beware Krishna's footprints." Because they love Krishna so much, so intimately, they could, as soon as they saw his footprints, just tears of love would awaken from their hearts. It would be such an impetus. And those footprints were so sacred. So today's verse, we find it's the first day where Krishna is taking care of cows. And how the cows can give so much milk. Because you see, on the spiritual plane, everything is based on loving exchange. Krishna tells, "Yegatam mam prapadyante tam sthataiva bhajamya." As you surrender to me, I reciprocate accordingly. Now in this world, that means as we surrender to Krishna, Krishna reveals himself accordingly. If we approach God for money, eventually he'll give us money. This life, next life, sometime. If we approach God for fame or power, he'll give it. If we approach God for mystic powers, yogic siddhis, he will give, eventually. If we approach God because we surrender to him with love, then Krishna gives himself to us. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. When our eyes are anointed with the decoration or the ornament of love, then we can see Krishna personally, face to face. In the spiritual world, this yegatamam purpatyante works both ways. Not only does Krishna reveal himself according to how we surrender to him, but we respond according to how Krishna shows his love for us. So how is it that these kamadenu cows in the spiritual world could give unlimited quantities of milk? Because you see, their milk is not based on how much grass they eat or how big their bags are or who their sire, the bull is that breeded with the mother. In the West, the dairies, when you want to have good milk production, you get the best mother and you get the fluid from the best bull and you put it in somehow or other, and then you're supposed to get a lot of milk. They don't do like that in the spiritual world. They don't even have to mate to have calves in the spiritual world. They just appear by Krishna's will. And how? So Krishna's love is the impetus for everything in the spiritual world. And because Krishna loves each cow intimately, unlimitedly, the cows reciprocate. Krishna surrenders his love to each cow, to each bull, to each bee, to each bird, to each tree, to each flower, to everyone. Krishna's unlimited love, and therefore the cows, because they're getting unlimited love from Krishna, and their milk is a reciprocation with his love, therefore they give unlimited milk. And because they're giving unlimited milk, it's increasing Krishna's unlimited love for them, and it becomes more unlimited. And because Krishna's love for them becomes more unlimited, because they're giving more unlimited milk, their milk production becomes more unlimited. And because of that, Krishna's love for them becomes more unlimited. And because of that, everything becomes more and more unlimited. Now, how can something unlimited become more? It doesn't make sense materially. It's not supposed to, because it's not material. How is it that something that is eternal and unlimited grow more and more and more? In the spiritual realm, everything is possible. But it has to be understood not through mathematics. It has to be understood through ras, through bhav, through the bhava of affection. Where there's bhava, all these things are naturally understood. All these inconceivable apparent contradictions are spontaneously realized. But without bhava, without love, trying to understand with our intelligence that which is beyond the realm of material existence, it's bewildering. Therefore, Krishna tells, only by devotion can I be understood as I am. Only by pure devotion can Krishna's activities actually be understood. Inconceivable. So in this way, unlimited quantities of milk that are ever increasing according to the unlimited love that Krishna is showing them. Because seva or bhakti, Srila Prabhupada translated as devotional service. It's not just devotion, not just love, but loving exchange. It's not that Krishna's in a little cave at Govardhan meditating on loving his devotee, and the gopis are sitting, in a little closet, hiding in their house, meditating on loving Krishna. That's there. That's nice. But Vrindavan is something more. It's loving exchange. Jivepi Baswamita Mata Deva Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. In this beautiful song, it describes the different activities the gopis are performing. Sometimes they're cleaning, sometimes they're churning butter, sometimes they're milking cows, sometimes they're making garlands. Whatever they may be doing, when they're dressing themselves, when they're walking, they're praying to always remember and always chant the holy names of the Lord. Everything is an act of love. And Krishna reciprocates in an active, dynamic way through seva, through service. In the spiritual worlds of Vaikuntha and ultimately Goloka, it is a place where everyone is engaged in beautiful service. And service, when there is an exchange of love through service that is called Lila, or transcendental pastimes. And these pastimes are unlimited and eternal. That is the spiritual world. Even the flowers. Each flower is thinking, Krishna loves me so much. Everyone is supremely fortunate, and everyone sees each other as supremely fortunate, but everyone is thinking, but my fortune is so special. The flower becomes beautiful and fragrant for Krishna. And Krishna glances up, and the flower is just waiting for Krishna to glance. And while waiting is in so much of the bhava of anticipation. And that anticipation in itself is the ecstasy of union with Krishna. And when Krishna glances upon the flower and smells the flower feels Krishna's love and wants to please Krishna by becoming more beautiful and more fragrant. And Krishna smells the flower's unlimited fragrance and appreciates it. And his love for the flower increases, and then the flower becomes more fragrant, more unlimitedly fragrant. And Krishna's love for that individual little flower person becomes unlimitedly more. Such gratitude. She's giving such fragrance. Oh, he's giving so much love. And this way, this unlimited fragrance is increasing, increasing, increasing unlimitedly. One flower from the spiritual world could make this entire earth planet absolutely fragrant. There would be no need for any of these alcoholic perfumes or anything. One single flower this big from the spiritual world could just bring a fragrance that would intoxicate everyone. That's the power of the fragrance. And what is the power of the fragrance? Because nothing is material. Everything is ras. Everything is exchange of love. Krishna's unlimited love is inducing unlimited reciprocation. Now there are unlimited such flowers, each one ever increasing their unlimited fragrance. Can you imagine what Vrindavan in the spiritual world, what it smells like? And it's never the same. It's not that, you know, this is an unbelievable, incredible, intoxicating, ecstatic fragrance. But you know, if you live there for eternity, you may kind of get tired of it. You may, it's not like that. Because every single little, even the flowers this big gives out such unlimited fragrance. But those unlimited fragrances are so dynamic, they can make their fragrance any flavor they like. And it's ever more intoxicating for all of eternity. Now, does this sound like some sort of fictional fantasy land? It's beyond fiction and fantasy land. It's the supreme reality. It's the absolute truth. This whole material existence and everything we think is so valuable and so real is all a fictional fantasy land. The spiritual world is truth. When the immortal soul thinks he's an eternal body and subject to birth, old age, disease, and death, and we're trying to enjoy different types of, you know, petty little pleasures that rub against our senses. Something, you know, some sight kind of rubs in our eyes and some ears. It's all fiction. Because it's not true. The world is real. But my conception of my relationship with the world is fiction. I am an eternal soul. I am of that world, of the real world, the spiritual world. So the whole situation here is fiction. Krishna tells in Gita, what is the time of awakening for a self-realized soul is the time of sleep for an ordinary person. And the time of awakening for an ordinary person is when great sages go to sleep. In the sense that there's a whole different conception. We're hearing these beautiful pastimes from Srimad Bhagavatam, and some people, because we're so much in this fiction of illusion, ignorance, we're thinking, that must be fiction. That's reality. That is our natural spiritual environment. This is a sleeping state. Maya means that which is not. This microphone is real. But to think that it is my microphone, my body, my skills, that's an illusion. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, everything is the property of God. Anything outside of ecstatic love is fiction. It's an illusion. And when we become so deeply entrenched in this illusion, when we hear about reality, we think, impossible, can't be. But the great sages, the acharyas, and the holy scriptures are opening our minds, opening our eyes to truth, to this spiritual reality. In today's verse, Krishna is speaking to Balaram. He has in the previous verses been talking about the trees. Each tree, he's saying, is a completely liberated yogi who has taken the forms of these trees just to serve. Krishna is saying, just to serve you, Balaram. And just see how they are all bowing down before you. Because the trees have so many fruits. They're kalpa vrikshas. And the trees could have any fruit they want. Because they're people. They're liberated souls. They're beyond humans in this world. Every blade of grass is beyond a human in this world, in the spiritual world. They're absolute enlightened jivas, or people. Just doing their seva for Krishna in such a wonderful way. So if a mango tree wants to give an apple to Krishna, an apple grows. If a chiku tree wants to give a pomegranate grows. Adi, adi. Whatever they wish, they are empowered by Krishna's love. They are empowered by Radha's love. Radha wants to make Krishna happy in every way. Ultimately, it's her, Vrindavaneshwari, Sri Radha, that empowers everyone with that unlimited capacity to give pleasure to Krishna through their love. And Krishna reciprocates, increasing, ever increasing. So the trees have so many fruits that they're bowing down, heavy with fruits. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he explained it in this way. He explained that a person in this world who actually has the fruits of good qualities is like a tree with good fruits. The weight of those fruits cause the tree to bow down to everyone. But a tree that doesn't have good fruits stands up very straight, doesn't bow to anyone. So similarly, a person who actually has character, amani namanadena, is eager to offer respect to the divinity, the spiritual essence within everyone, everywhere. And a person who doesn't have that character very egoistically thinks, I am higher, I am greater than others. If you want to make a little test of how you've actually made genuine spiritual advancement, if you think you're better than anyone, that means you are spiritually in a diseased condition. Amani namanadena. We may consider ourselves more fortunate, and we want to share that fortune with people who may not be so fortunate. But our fortune is not because of me. It's not because I am better than you. My fortune is because of Radharani's grace. My fortune is because of Krishna's grace. That doesn't make me better than you, because that the potential of that grace is in you too. So I bow to that potential within you. When we understand that it's this grace that is empowering us with good fortune, it humbles us. It doesn't make us egoistic. When we become proud of Krishna, we become humble. When we're proud of ourselves, to that extent, we can't be proud of Krishna because we're taking credit. Ahankara vimudhatma. This is the basic principle of material bondage, this ego. I am the doer, I am the proprietor, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, just like a tree, when it has ripe, good fruits of spiritual qualities, offers all respects, to bow down to Krishna in every situation, and bow down to Krishna in the heart of all living beings in an appropriate way. And today he's talking about the bees. How many of you like bees? Please raise your hand. How many of you don't really welcome bees when they come in your home? Is that because bees sting? Bees do sting. Should I tell you something confidential? I'm not going to tell. Kind of private, but I'll tell because of my foolishness. Anyways, I don't know if any of you ever wore the lungi of a sannyasi, but one time I was in a place where there were all people all around. There were ladies, there were men, there were brahmacharis, there were grihastas, there were mothers, brahmacharinis, everybody was there. And I was kind of giving some, I think I was leading a kirtan. And there were bees around. And a whole little group of those bees flew under my dhoti and up. And they were trapped up there. You know, my legs, my thighs, all these different places. And they couldn't get out. And because the cloth was pressing against them, they panicked. They were stinging me again and again. It's like, and I couldn't let them out. Because I would have been like a Nagababa. I would have had to publicly take my dhoti to let them out. So what would you do in that situation? You know, there was all respectable people and everything. Anyway, somehow or other, I ran away and took my dhoti off and let all the bees fly away and said, thank you, thank you, thank you. Krishna has his way of humbling all of us. I'm thinking I'm the controller. But the bees in the spiritual world, they don't sting. And even if they do, it will feel ecstatic. Because in this world, bees sting out of fear. They're not mean. They're actually really nice people, bees. But when they get in fear, it's just their natural reaction. But in the spiritual world, there's no fear. Abhaya charanadavindare. Every living being has taken shelter of Krishna, so there's no possibility of fear. Everything is love. So even if they sting, it's out of love. And when somebody loves, when a bee stings you in the spiritual world, if that ever happens, it is hundreds and millions and trillions and quadrillions and unlimitedly quadrillion times quadrillion times quadrillion times more pleasure than some romantic pleasure in this world, which is, you know, an exchange of affection also. But the bees, they really love. So when they sting, it's... You dance. You just welcome unlimited bees under your dhoti. I'm sorry about that. I've just been traveling a lot these days. Not exactly like that, but that is the spirit. Everything is anand. And Krishna is praising these bees that they are the greatest, most self-realized, enlightened sages who've all come and they're following you around wherever you go. And do you hear their buzzing? Bzzz. Do you all know what bees sound like? Everyone, try to do as best you can. Much louder, please. Louder, 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 please. That was beautiful. Kirtan of bees. So they're all chanting. And Krishna and Balaram, they're hearing the heart of the bees with their bzzz. They're singing Krishna and Balaram's names. They're expressing their gratitude. They're expressing their love for Krishna Balaram as they're buzzing. And Krishna Balaram hears the intention of the heart.
We just hear bzzz.
But they're hearing all the, they're hearing beautiful, heartfelt, loving prayers, offerings of their wings, of every part, their body, mind, and soul, they're offering in love. The most erudite, artistic poets of this world cannot compare to the poetry sung within the buzz of a bee in the spiritual world. And Krishna's hearing that. And Krishna's giving all credit to his brother Balaram. He's saying, all these bees are always following you. Wherever you go, they're following you. Because of their love for you. Because of their gratitude to you. And they're all singing your praises in that spirit of ecstasy. And how Balaram, you are reciprocating by your glances, by your every movement, telling the bees, yes, come with me into my most confidential groves in the forest of Vrindavan. The Lord blessed the bees by saying, O bees, come into my confidential grove and feel free to taste its fragrance. This is servant of the servant of the servant. I'm going to end with this meditation. How Krishna loves the bees. How the bees love Krishna. How the flowers love Krishna and Krishna loves the flowers. So if you love someone, you want to please those that that person loves with the same enthusiasm as you want to serve your beloved. That's actual love. So the fragrance, we were talking about the fragrance of the flowers. They're making themselves fragrant for Krishna. But because they love Krishna, they want to give pleasure to all those who love Krishna. So they're making themselves very, very fragrant for the bees. And the flowers are just, their fragrance is, please Krishna, enjoy our fragrance. And please, bees, come and taste our fragrance. And the bees come, and they go on the flowers, and they start drinking the nectar of the flower. And the flower is giving more and more nectar. And the bees, why are they collecting the nectar? Because that empowers them to sing even more beautiful for Krishna. And the flowers know that. That the bees, my nectar is helping to empower them to sing even better for Krishna. Let my nectar be better and better and better. And the bees, let me get better and better. And there's such a love and gratitude between the flower and the bee. And it's unlimitedly ever increasing. This is how when Krishna is in the center, there's total love, total respect, total gratitude for all. Srila Prabhupada said family life. When Krishna is in the center, it's Vaikuntha. It's like this. I'm sure all of you grihasthas have that experience. At least it's easy for a swami to believe that you do. We don't have that experience. But when Krishna is in the center, all disagreements become insignificant. We're totally there for each other because we love Krishna. We're totally there because we love each other. Because you can't love Krishna and not love those who Krishna loves. And Krishna loves every living being. Aham bija pratapita. beginning with those who are consciously awakened with their love for Krishna, or those who are truly, genuinely, sincerely aspiring to love Krishna, down to people who have totally forgotten their love for Krishna. But it's there in their hearts, and Krishna loves them. This is bhakti. This is the spiritual world. This is what Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas have given us. Is there any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Maharaj, I have seen personally in my life that whoever is a very, great devotee, who has become a great devotee in his life has been centered around, some austerities. When we see Lord Chaitanya telling to the milk-drinking Brahmana, that what austerities Gajendra did. But Maharaj, in his previous life, he was a great sage, and he did quite a lot of austerities, and he was sitting in meditation and everything like that. But personally, like Shabri also, you were discussing yesterday, so she also went through a lot of austerities. But personally, it has been said by Prabhupada that no austerities required and things like that. So could you please clarify?
So I will clarify. Prabhupada never said that. Human life is meant for austerity. But what is austerity? Austerity is to accept what is favorable for devotional service and reject what is unfavorable. It is not the austerity that attracts Krishna. It's the love. If we are performing our austerities for the purpose of awakening that love, then it will be a positive aid to achieve that love. Our austerities is to express to Krishna our sincere desire to love Him. When we fast on Ekadasi, when we follow the four regulative principles, when we rise early in the morning, when we take our baths, when we perform our service, sometimes it's austerity. And we must do that if we want to purify ourselves. But it's not the austerity that captures Krishna. If we don't have the proper attitude, if we're not doing it, ultimately austerity is to reduce the distractions of the material inclinations of the body and mind so that we can fix our body and mind in the loving remembrance and service and meditation on Krishna. That is austerity. And we need to do that because we're so much distracted, we're so much diverted. But it's not the austerity that attracts Krishna. It's the love that we gain through the austerity. So we don't have to do excessive austerities. But we do have to, if we want to develop this love, do what is favorable for the awakening of our bhakti. So yes, Gajendra and Shabari, they did tapasya, but they did it to achieve pure love. And it's that bhakti. It's that bhakti that connects them, not the austerity. Austerity is like a tool. But the tool is meant to it's meant to be used by a person who's going to do something right with it. So for this Brahman, Lord Chaitanya wanted to teach the world that people can do austerities and become proud. It's usually what happens if we do too many austerities. We become hard-hearted and proud. Look what I could do. Look at how I could fast. Look at my celibacy. Look at my not sleeping. The six Goswamis, they were the most austere of anyone. The perfection of life is to follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. They slept 1 to 2 hours a day. They were Goswamis, completely detached from any physical relationships for pleasure. They hardly ate anything. But they were absolutely humble because they did it out of love. So when austerity creates pride, when austerity is for the purpose of being austere or just getting some spiritual advancement, then that austerity is a distraction itself. So Shabari did austerity, but she did it for love. And it wasn't her austerity that attracted Ram, it was her love that attracted Ram. And love was the means, austerity was the means of deepening that love. Does that answer your question? Hare Om. Prem Leela Devi. We already called on Prem Leela Devi.
Maharaj, in the spiritual world, gopas, gopis, everybody was performing whatever service for pleasure of Krishna. And we devotees try to perform service for the pleasure of Guru and Vaishnavas. And when we are performing this service, there is a feeling of, naturally a feeling of being better than others. Because our motive is to please our spiritual master. But while performing this service, when we have, when our attitude is to be like, like we want to please our spiritual master at any cost. In that, during such thing, if I, tend to hurt somebody, or disappoint somebody, because obviously when I'm trying to be better than somebody, I definitely will be hurting somebody. But I don't believe that I'm hurting somebody because I want to please my spiritual master. So I want to know, is this my positive way of progressing towards Krishna consciousness or not? Because I know my spiritual master is very pleased with my service.
Everyone is very pleased with your service. As we go deeper into bhakti, our attitude becomes more refined. We want to please our spiritual masters, and therefore we're doing our particular service the best we possibly can to please, and we may please. But more, as we're refined, we understand how Krishna and all the spiritual masters, they love all the devotees. And if it's creating envy and creating conflict, we may on one level be pleasing, maybe pleased with me in that sense. But when there's envy and conflict and controversy over all these, egoistic things going on around, that's very displeasing. So a more refined nature is I don't want him just to be pleased with me. I want him to be, or her, whoever, Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, Krishna, Prabhupada. Let's speak about Prabhupada. We don't want Prabhupada just to be pleased with me. We want Prabhupada to be pleased. As far as possible, we want Prabhupada to be pleased with everything and everyone. It's a very selfish thing.
I'm pleasing him, but he's disgusted with what's going on. Is that the way a mother, thinks toward a child? You know, we want the child, if there's love for a child, we want the child not just to be pleased with the food I give, but he's miserable with everything else in life. But oh, he likes the idlis I made. Huh? We're actually concerned with the overall pleasure of the child. That's love. So similarly, as far as possible, we should try to create this energy in which we're investing, we're offering to the overall pleasure. So that means as far as possible, as we are trying to please Srila Prabhupada through our particular service, we're also very concerned with not creating a displeasing situation socially around us. And if we're aware of that, if we're conscious of that, that's why we read in the story of Anantacharya giving instructions to that disciple of Parasaramuni. He said, a great devotee is like salt. The nature of salt is salt gives so much flavor to a vegetable preparation, but remains very much invisible. It's like if you take, Prem Leela is one of the world's best cooks, actually. If you go to her house, you may get a lot of guests after this class. It's wonderful. Udupi, South Indian prasad, sambar, dosa, all the beautiful chutneys and sabjis with coconuts. And we taste the coconut and we taste the vegetables and we taste the spices, whatever they may be. And those are usually what we praise and think is prominent. But how many of us say, Prem Leela, you put such excellent salt in this preparation. Perfect salt. Has anyone ever told you that? Be honest. Say it in the microphone.
No, Maharaj.
No, she's cooked for so many thousands of people. No one has ever praised the salt. But if there's too much salt, what will happen?
Yeah, nobody will like it.
And if there's too little salt?
Even same, Maharaj.
So a devotee's like that. We give the flavor, but we're not concerned with getting the credit. And that attitude pleases the spiritual master more than anything. That spirit of wanting to be the servant of the servant of the servant. To actually want to please. It's not about me. It's about us. That's a higher conception of devotional service. Does that kind of answer your question? If you invite me for prasad, we'll discuss it. Thank you very, very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.